The Fed says there's no inflation. I'll show you why they think that. And as reverse repo is blowing out, the Fed suddenly decides they need to conduct an emergency test of the system. We'll talk about why I think they're up, why I think they're doing that. And despite a major draw on crude oil inventories, energy stocks went down. Why did that happen? All that and more on today's Macro Show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. Let's get right into our headline story of why isn't the Fed think there's inflation? Are they blind? Can they not see it? Or is there something else they're fixated on? This week alone, there were two reports, one from the New York Fed that says why. Let's go take a look at the first report. And here it's called What's Behind the Recent Rise in Core Inflation. Now, it starts out by saying the core PCE inflation is surpassing 3%. Now, if you don't know what the PCE is, well, let's start with core. Core excludes food and energy. And let's jump over to the Cleveland Fed's website. And it says here the CPI is based on a survey of what households are buying. So these are things that you and I actually go out and spend money on. Whereas the PCE is based on surveys of what businesses are selling. Now, there's some other factors that go into this, but there's some interesting piece here is that the PCE data is always lower than the CPI. So there's obviously some bias there. But again, one is based on what we're actually doing. The other is based on a survey of what businesses are saying. So there's a big difference there. But the Fed prefers the PCE, and they prefer it without food and energy. I know you're shaking your head on that, but let's take a look at the rest of this article because there's some really interesting things in here. And it goes on to say, is this recent, they're trying to decide, is this recent upward inflation pressure transitory, representing pandemic-related price movements, or is it an indication of more persistent broad-based inflation trends? Now, this is what the majority of people think is going on. Let's go down here a little bit. And it says here, the San Francisco Fed's inflation sensitivity to COVID-19 series, the data shows contributions to the core PCE inflation by their degree of sensitivity to the economic disruptions caused by the pandemic. So the San Francisco Fed is trying to figure out is what we're seeing real inflation or is it circumstantial to the pandemic? They go on to say the PCE price index is the inflation measure targeted by the FOMC. Core PCE removes food and energy products, two things we all need to consume, and as it says here, which are historically rather volatile. So look, it's really easy to hit your targets if you take out the two most volatile components and tend to cloud the underlying trend in inflation. So there you go. Fed does not think the food and energy is relevant to you. But anyways, we'll go on. It says our inflation indicators divide the categories of core PCE inflation into components that are sensitive and insensitive to the pandemic. COVID-sensitive components include categories where either prices or quantities change significantly. Well, that's easy. So we'll segment things that went up a bunch apart from things that didn't. So at the onset of the pandemic between February and April of 2020. So they're going to focus on the things that went up a whole bunch because they were low in February and April of 2020. Now, COVID-insensitive components include all other core PCE categories. So pretty much anything that didn't go up a whole bunch is probably in the other side of this. Let's go on. It says such disruptions include mandatory and voluntary social distancing measures, pandemic-related government policies, and supply chain bottlenecks. Now, we've talked about that being a big issue on this show. Hospital services, restaurant services, and physician services are among the largest of these categories, which I find very interesting. Now, the probably the best part of this article is right here, and we'll dig into this piece quite a bit. The COVID-sensitive component has rebounded dramatically since bottoming out in April 2020. Its contribution to core PCE inflation increased to 1.1% in January 2021 and then surged to 2.4% in April 2021. This component now contributes, get this, 1.7% more to the core PCE inflation than it did on average between 2015 and 2019. So they're saying, look, 1.7% is pretty significant. So let's take a look at the core PCE, which I have here. And you can see it's sitting up here at about 3 to 3.1. Now, if you take 1.7 off of that, what do you get? Well, you get 1.3 to 1.4. We'll even round it. We'll just say 1.3 to 1.5, suggesting what the Fed believes is inflation is going to go back down here to where it was in mid-2020 and even into early 2021. In fact, they think inflation is being so bumped up by these other categories that the last time we really saw this, other than that brief, you know, piece here, is back in the 2015 year. So back in 2015, we saw this fairly low rate of inflation. The Fed thinks that's coming back because 1.7% of this index is attributed to these COVID-sensitive pieces. Now, let's finish this piece up and go down to the bottom where we got to find the end. Here it is. How persistent will the recent inflation increase be? Well, the recent sharp increase in the measured inflation is unlikely to persist beyond this year. So there you go. You don't have to worry about it. After this year, it's all over. The increase is being driven by spending categories where prices fell the most last spring. So it's saying, look, things went down a whole lot last spring, and yes, they're contributing to big increases in the year-over-year percentage change. Furthermore, much of the surge in the COVID-sensitive components due to health services and used vehicles, categories in which evidence suggests recent price increases will be temporary. So there you go. The remaining COVID-sensitive categories include many products where prices increase likely for temporary reasons. So there you go. The Fed believes, at least from the San Francisco Fed, is this is indeed transitory. So I want you to be thinking about that. You know, what did Fed Chair Powell tell us at the last FOMC meeting? That they think is transitory. So this is where they're looking at the data and saying, look, we don't think these big year-over-year increases are going to hold. Now let's go and take a look at a piece from the Department of Labor and see they came to the similar conclusion. Well, maybe because maybe they talked to each other. I don't know. But this report talks about how the April 2021 Consumer Price Index inflation was way out of line. In fact, it was an outlier in the data. And I'm just going to take you right to the end, but they're saying, look, the CPI change was way out of line and abnormal. And that's their argument, is that that is the problem, is you got a big print. So let's take a look at what they have to say here. Should the April CPI report cause concern? While the analysis article establishes that the April 2021 inflation report is one of the highest inflation readings since the Fed instituted its inflation targeting in the mid-90s, there are other factors at play, as inflation is measured as a percentage change in the price of a basket of goods from the prior year. So again, they're talking about the same thing the other article did, was prices were depressed. By construction, the April inflation report is comparing prices in 2021 with depressed prices from April 2020, which was during the COVID-19 lockdown. While the April 2021 inflation report is undeniably historically high, it also falls an unprecedented turbulent period for the economy for which the historical evidence might provide imperfect guidance. So here they're just saying, look, we're not really sure, but we're pretty confident that this inflation story is going away. And I got even more evidence that I think they actually are right. Now, you know that I think it's transitory, but I've got some more evidence that we'll get to as we toward the end of the show. Now, let's talk about what's going on with this reverse repo thing, because out of nowhere, Fed decided they needed to conduct an emergency test of the system. Well, let's first look at how bad the system problem is getting. Now, yesterday or today, if we look at the data here, what it shows is the banks cleared off $813.6 billion worth of cash to the Fed in an overnight operation to get desperately needed Treasury securities. Now, at the same time they did that, Fed had a small value exercise for operational readiness testing. Well, what is operational readiness testing? Well, let's go to the New York Fed and see what they say about it. It says, the New York Fed undertakes certain small open market transactions from time to time for the purpose of testing operational readiness to implement existing and potential policy directives from the FOMC. And though these small exercises involve end-to-end processes from trading through settlement, they are relatively small in size. And yes, they were extremely small. These exercises are conducted for the purpose of maintaining operational readiness rather than to fill a policy directive, and therefore do not indicate anything about future timing or direction of changes in policy. Now, I don't know about you, but that seems a bit odd that when there's a fire, that we're conducting a fire, we're running the fire alarm to see if it all works. And clearly there's something going on when you need $813.6 billion of overnight repurchase agreements to keep all this cash in the system from driving rates even lower. So what this tells me is someone at the Fed is concerned that perhaps these numbers are going even higher. And we talked about how the roll-off of the TGA, which we get the data tomorrow, and we'll look at it probably either Friday or next week, that more cash is coming to the banking system, and perhaps they're running this operational test in the middle of a fire. You know, we're conducting a fire drill in the middle of a fire because we think the fire is going to get worse, and maybe we need to test the system to see if it can handle even more volume than it's doing now. That's the way I look at it, because it just seems really weird to me, and probably the same to you, is what is actually going on here. Now, I want to get into the economic data where we're going to get into this oil story, because it's really interesting is how can you get a big crude oil draw and at the same time, oil stocks go down. In fact, even oil reverse. But there's something in the manufacturing data we need to look at, because there's signs that the global manufacturing sector is peaking out. And that's not good for the global economy. Let's go back here to the Tuesday data. And we've got existing home sales now down 4 months in a row, printed minus 0.9% for May. Not a strong showing if you're expecting home prices to rise. Where again, existing home sales now down 4 months in a row. And there's some interesting things in the Richmond Manufacturing and Services Indexes. Let's take a look at those. Now, remember, when we look at these are the percentage of firms showing an increase, the plus or decrease is a minus. So the way we read this is 22% of firms in the 5th District showed an increase in current activity over 18% in May. So that was an improvement, but the story isn't that great. If you look at shipments, only 8% of firms now show an increase versus 12. Volume of new orders is up. That's good. 35% of firms say new orders. Backlog of orders is falling. So they're clearly getting through these orders if their backlogs are going down. Capacity utilization, only 5% of firms are seeing a problem in the capacity. That's not a sign of inflation. Remember, you want to see capacity utilization going up, up, and up. Vendor lead time is up. Local business conditions are up. Capital expenditures, fewer firms reporting increases there. But wait till you see the price trends. Let's look at the employment. Number of employees, 19% of firms showing an increase versus 25, so not showing a huge surge in hiring. Wages are up, that 37% of firms increasing wages. But the average work week, only 10% of firms are showing an average work week increase. So that isn't that good. So you're not seeing that demand push through. You know, you really want to see capacity utilization up. You want to see work week up. You want to see employees up. You want to see this demand flowing through. And when you look at the backlog of orders, only 22% of firms showing that. That's telling you the inflation story is rolling over, but the price trend really shows it. Look at this, prices paid. Now this is year over year. 9.82% prior month, 9.42% here in June. I got that right, June, yes. But look at prices received. They also went down. So this is deflationary or disinflationary, meaning the prices paid went down and prices received went down. And notably, they went down about the same amount, so dollar amount. So that's telling you that this inflation story is peaking. And we've talked about this in the past, where you get these peaks in prices paid and starts to roll over, and it gives you an indication that the inflation story is ending. And worse, we know the bond market already figured that out back in March. Let's take a look at the services story, because you know it's telling us some interesting things too. Revenues, 25% of firms showing an increase, the 41% showing an increase in demand. Local business conditions, a third are showing increases. So those are good. Number of employees, only 13% are showing an increase. So not big numbers here in the services sector, whereas you'd think this is where it would happen because economies reopen and unemployment benefits are going away. Wages, 37% of firms increasing wages. Work week, only 15% of firms increasing. So not big numbers here. Prices paid up from 5.34 to 5.67. So there's some inflation there in prices paid in the services sector. But the prices received is also going up, but nowhere near as much. So 3.37 to 3.83% year over year. So again, you know, services sector getting squeezed at the margin, not being able to fully pass those on. And also keep in mind, the services sector lags the manufacturing sector. Let's take a look at these preliminary purchasing managers indices, because these are going to tell us what's going on with the manufacturing sector. And what you're going to see is some peaks here. Before we get to that, the two-year note auction went off yesterday with without any problems. Today's 5-year, not as much demand, but no issues there either. So here, let's start with Australia. So the way you read these, remember, 50 is no change. Above 50 is an increase. Below 50 is a contraction. So we see it went from 60 to 58.4, means expanding at a slower rate. Again, these are all preliminary numbers, so keep that in mind where you see the P is preliminary. Expanded at a slower rate. How about the services sector? Expand about the same rate, 58 to 56. So not big differences there, but slightly slower rate of expansion there. How about Japan? It just seems to can't get out of its rut. Manufacturing sector went from 53 to 51.5. So very, very slight expansion. So again, slower rate of growth in the Japanese manufacturing PMI. Services sector contracting at a slightly slower rate at 47.2. So definitely problems there. Let's look at France. We see the manufacturing PMI 59 to 58.6. So expanded again, slightly slower rate. Not much, but slightly slower rate. How about Germany, looking at their manufacturing sector, slightly faster rate, 64.4 to 64.9. So you'd see these numbers are about the same, tells you it's peaking out. And let's look at the Eurozone as a whole. The manufacturing PMI, 63.1, 60, prior month, 63.1, telling you it is indeed peaking, and the services sector there, 55 to 58, so expanding a bit faster rate, bringing the composite PMI 57.1 to 59.2. So due to the services sector, it's expanding at a slightly faster rate than before, but not a whole lot faster. So you're seeing some peaks there. Let's take a look at Great Britain. What do we see in the manufacturing PMI? Expanded at a slightly slower rate, 65.6 to 64.2. So again, telling you, as we look around the world and now are heading into the US data, are we about to see something similar as we have global growth now turning into a global peak? Mortgage applications up 2.1%, most of that due to refinance. So the housing data is telling us there's a slowdown in the housing market. Looking up north to our friends in Canada, we see retail sales went down in April at 5.7%. That is ouch. Excluding food and energy, down 7.2%. This will eventually get to America, so these big minus numbers will eventually show up here. Now into the U.S. data for the manufacturing services PMI. The manufacturing came in 62.1 last month, 62.6, expanding at a bit faster rate, but not much. You notice these numbers are very similar. Again, these are preliminary numbers. How about the services sector? This is a surprise. I would expect this number to be the opposite. Went from 70.4 last month to 64.8, so expanding at a slower rate than the month before, telling you that, again, the U.S. economy appears to be peaking along with the rest of the world in terms of the manufacturing sector. Let's take a look at new home sales. Now down 2 months in a row, minus 5.9% for May, missing expectations. And how about crude? Now here's a real story is you've got this big crude draw, 7.6 million barrels. That's good news if you're bullish on energy. Gasoline inventory is down 2.9 million barrels. That's good. Distillate stocks up, you know, this is your diesel fuel, jet fuel, up 1.75 million. Not a big deal when you get draws like that. And let's go take a look at the charts because what's going on in the energy sector here? Where's XLE? You said this should be super bullish for energy stocks. And if you look at this red candle, what it means is while it did close higher on the day, it closed from the prior day, it closed low, it opened and closed below the open. That's why you get that red candle. So, wow, that's kind of weird. Why would it sell off? Well, let's look at crude. Well, crude closed higher, but it did not close anywhere near its high for the day. That too was rejected. So, that seems kind of odd when you get this big crude oil inventory draw. And the answer is we have to go to King Dollar. And what happened here is the dollar came down, hit the 200-day moving average, bounced off it. Remember, this isn't always the case. This is not always the case, but the dollar, you know, when you see the dollar go up, it puts downward pressure on the energy sector. There are times they can absolutely rally together, but what you're seeing here is a great inventory report kind of turned away by the dollar. All right, let's get back to our next story, which is this inflation bit. We got the money supply data from last month. Now remember, this used to be weekly, it's now monthly. And you see the year-over-year rate dropping to 13.8%. So the growth rate in the money supply is slowing. This should continue to slow without stimulus checks and as extended unemployment benefits go away. This should come down. Now we also get the monetary base. And this is something that is validating the Fed because one of the best markers for future inflation is the money multiplier. You typically take the M2, divide it by the monetary base, make a small adjustment so your numbers come out right. And the way you read this is when the money multiplier is rising, what it's telling you is the money supply is growing faster than the monetary base. And that doesn't always mean inflation, but it suggests that people have more money or saving more money. And when that money comes out of savings, then it can be inflationary. But when it's going down, it tells you that the monetary base is growing more than proportional. So proportional being 1-to-1. So it's growing more than proportional to the money supply. And that is the negative impact of QE going on here, because the monetary base goes up due to the Fed's quantitative easing operations, creating reserve assets and locking them up in the financial system. And what you see when you overlay the CPI report is that when the money multiplier is trending down and the CPI is going up, that the CPI is going to be rejected, putting some credence to the Fed's earlier reports of this being transitory, even if it isn't transitory. Due to the tight financial conditions caused by QE, well, it's indicating, my friends, that yes, CPI and the inflation trend is headed lower. Anyways, thanks for being fans. Apologize about the first video not having audio. I guess that happens every once in a while. But thanks for liking, thanks for subscribing, thanks for being fans, thanks for letting me know about these glitches. If it wasn't for you, this show wouldn't go on and it wouldn't be here today. So big thank you. We'll see you on Friday for the macro show, and then we'll look forward to whatever interesting data comes in between now and then. I'm Steve Van Meter. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It is not intended to provide investment or other advice. Serials not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by a financial security financial instrument or to participate in particular trading strategies. Video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, business expressed this video that do not reflect the value of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.